Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple, isn't it refreshing?
We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. It's good to have you listening to Atlanta's number one sports station, its number one sports show. A couple of NFL things, and we're going to talk to our buddy Joe Patrick, who covers the Falcons for us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He was up there today at practice, short practice, but the news that came out was Michael Penix will not play Friday.
What?
And it's driving me crazy. Before we get to Joe Patrick, a couple of things coming out of the competition committee meeting around the NFL today. One of them is something I think most football fans have said for a long time. There will no longer be a Pro Bowl game. They are doing away with it, becoming the first major U.S. league to end its all-star event. The NFL is going to focus its celebration on Pro Bowlers with no alternates. So your name to the Pro Bowl, we will be celebrating those individuals.
You get your bonus.
And you get your money.
Yeah.
But Mike, this flag football stuff and all that, it's gotten to be nonsense.
Yeah. I haven't watched it in years. I know people just love anything to do with the NFL, but this to me was just a colossal waste of time. And it's fun because, man, they used to, man, when they had the big shoulder pads in the old days, they were getting after it in the old Honolulu Stadium and all that. And it just, it's been devalued. You can't play football at half speed or at, you know, 75% speed. NBA has tried to tinker with theirs. NHL's found some gold with the International Series. The only all-star game worth its damn is baseball because you still got to hit 100 mile an hour fastball.
All right, more on this. Some other decisions coming out, including the NFL will now suspend players for one game for certain tackles. We'll go over that.
Oh, but let's like
talk,
that.
But let's talk to Joe Patrick. Joe, what's your assessment on this decision to not play Michael Penix Friday?
I'm surprised, guys. Like, I thought that, you know, the way that this was tracking, he gets into practice at the beginning of the week. He basically, you know, would have had a week to prepare himself and then to not just, like, obviously play a whole game, but to go out there for a series. It feels like that would be something that, you know, would be useful for him. But I'm very surprised in that respect. But it's been interesting to me, guys, since the news came down and then, you know, you see Adam Schefter tweet it, and then you see some of these NFL insiders, these national guys, start to give some commentary. It didn't seem to me like a lot of that commentary was really like suggesting that Michael Penix is out of, you know, the potential quarterback one competition for week one. I followed up with Kevin Stefanski to ask him, you know, if Michael isn't able to play or is not going to play in this game, does that basically mean that Tua is going to be your week one starter? And he didn't want to go so far as to say, yes, he was. So it's very interesting in that respect, whether is it wise to play Michael Penix potentially in week one, having not played, you know, preseason. That's, you know, a decision for the coaching staff. But to answer your question, Carl, I'm definitely surprised that he's not going to play any part in this one.
Me too.
Yeah, and it's a little, it's disappointing for the fans because all we've seen is Tua look bad and Jack Strand look good. Cooper Rush looked good as
Frost.
Well. Now, yeah. I don't want to put words in your mouth, and I don't know if Steak put words in your mouth, but I heard Steak talking to Xander with Steve Weiss today, and they were relating that you thought, you know, maybe there's certainly a vibe that the players are behind Michael Penix Jr., and maybe they're not connecting with Tua?
Well, no, I just think that, like, they have more experience with Michael Penix. Like, these playmakers have been with Mike for 3 years, and, you know, this is going on the third year now, and they've been through ups and downs with him. They've been through way more reps with him than they would have with Tua. And, you know, and I will also say that, you know, when Kirk Cousins came in, he was doing everything he possibly could to try to get on the same page with his guys. You know, he coordinated a trip to go down and see John Gruden in his offices and was, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't know that that same kind of level has been there in trying to get that time on task, as Kirk might say. So I'm not suggesting that, like, the guys don't like one of the quarterbacks or they do like one of them more. I'm just saying that it's just true, factually, that they just have spent more time and have a better understanding with, you know, one of these guys than the other, who is obviously newer to the team. But I will say, you know, like, Tua has looked poor in some of these, I call them like public appearances that he's had, whether it's these preseason games or whatever. I would say even at Lanier, you know, there was like an ugly fumbled handoff between he and Bijan, but it hasn't all been bad. I think it's getting a little bit overblown because just some of the worst stuff has happened in some of these, you know, more public moments. But like, he had a great day today. And I kind of continue to joke, guys, that like, I think the best quarterback situation for this team is a joke, but like, it's to have Penix play until you get to the 20-yard line, and then you put Penix, and you, then you put Tua in the red zone, and you let him use his little ability to layer those balls in and that accuracy. So that might be the best option. But that's like, you know, you're building a robot quarterback at that point.
But
it'll be interesting to see how they end up meshing with Tua.
Yeah, this is why I love you, Joe. Though this is what fair and balanced reporting. Did you? Because you just said that something very important. Like, he's had good days. That's been lost in this conversation. Right. It's all
100%.
It's been lost. And so, like, the Falcons don't think he's a bum. Has he mastered this offense? That I don't know. But I will tell you what I'm hearing. You tell me what you think. That has been one of the deals with both of these guys, taking in a new offense. And look, when you have full confidence in what you're doing, you play differently, right? And so I think that part of it for Tua has been the growing pains that Alex Van Pelt has been talking about, and even, I think, Tommy Rees. What do you think?
Yeah, 100%. I would even go back, when you talk about that confidence aspect, you go back to that Denver Broncos preseason game, and, you know, he's got Ethan Onyanwa starting at right tackle in that game. And then by the second drive, Jake Matthews got a little dinged up, so he comes out, and you've basically got two backup tackles at that point. And, you know, it's understandable, and it's not to say that it was acceptable, the performance that was out there, because certainly, you know, not catching a shotgun snap is nobody's fault but Tua's, but you can certainly understand why maybe the clock is sped up in that instance, and you're just trying to kind of survive at that point. So, it hasn't all been bad from Tua. I will say this, though, Carl, again, to kind of go back to some of these national reporters, they do suggest that, like, he hasn't really shown enough to this point.
I agree.
Like, if he had gone out there and played well enough, he would have had the job by now.
I agree. Look, the fact that coach hasn't named who the starter is, everybody else in the NFL has. Everybody
but
else.
But I also missed the first week of practice with his back issue. That's what a lot of people in the national narrative keep forgetting.
Mike, that's a really good point, and it's something that I've kind of been thinking about a little bit more. Which is that, it seemed like unsuspected, you know, like he came in and it was a bit of a surprise, and you just wonder how much that kind of set back, what the coaches had planned for those opening practices, the opening week. He just frankly wasn't able to do a whole lot. In fact, what we were talking about during that time was that Penix was actually doing more for a while early in training camp, even though Penix wasn't participating in the 11-on-11 stuff. Right. You know, he was able to throw the football around a lot more in the 7-on-7s and give the receivers some of the better work than what Tua was able to do because he came in with that injury. So I do wonder also if that set him back to the point where it did make this more of a competition maybe than the coaching staff and Kevin Stefanski would have thought it would have been coming into it.
Smoking Joe Patrick with our Falcons Camp Confidential here on Dukes and Bell. All right, so you just said don't be surprised. Maybe Penix can still start week one. We'll wait and see. What are we going to do with Jack Strand?
I think you have to roster him on the 53-man roster. And it's not to say that, like, if you don't do it, then he's definitely going to get snapped up. But if you don't do it, I know Sean Payton's going to be looking at him being like, how can I make room to pick this guy up so that I can just burn the Falcons because I feel like it one more time? No, but I mean, I think with what he's shown, he's obviously shown enough to become a commodity around the league. And I frankly, guys, I think it would just kind of be embarrassing for the Falcons to, you know, make the move, the gamble to let him, you know, to waive him and then try to get him back on the practice squad only for that to happen. And then it would be even more embarrassing if he goes on to, you know, achieve something in the NFL. And I think that, you know, speaking of achieving things, like, we're kind of jokes. He's from this small school. And obviously there's this other quarterback competition that's happening that he's not really a part of and isn't going to immediately have any playing time. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past him developing into somebody who could potentially be a starting quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he's got a lot of the measurables. I think the reason why he slipped through the cracks a little bit was obviously just because of where he played and the lack of tape that was out there of him and the scouting knowledge. And so now more of that's getting out because he's playing, on the biggest stage, and he's proving to not really be too affected by the NFL level. For somebody coming from a school as small as his and then to adapt as well as he is to this new environment at this professional level says a lot about the work that he's put in. And I think that there's a ceiling that I don't know where it is, actually, guys, because he's got the ability to run. He's got speed. He's got size. He's got the throwing power. And he just feels like he's got some natural comfort back there in the pocket.
I agree. It is our buddy Joe Patrick. He's been at all of these Falcon practices. Today, the announcement by Kevin Stefanski is Penix will not play on Friday. So we're examining that and talking about it because I want to ask you this, and maybe it's a little bit unfair, but I have to ask from the standpoint of how much confidence will you have knowing that we will not have seen him since the last time he walked off the field and was injured last year, and more than likely it will be a real game when we finally get a chance to see Penix, and that you have the confidence that he's going to be just fine. Because I think a lot of fans feel that way that are in support of Michael Penix, just like brushing this off and being like, hey, Joe, you know what? He'll start week four and he'll throw four touchdowns. He might, but he might not.
Right, exactly. And that's why, regardless of whether he's going to be in contention for the week one starter, it's why I would want him to have played at least some snaps just to kind of get that feeling for whenever he does play. So I think we all understand he's going to play at some point. I would also suggest, Carl, it's the terrible nature of this injury that he suffered last year, which is going to there's always going to be this specter of it happening again, And I think that for him, even when he goes into his career, whether it's a second contract with the Falcons or somebody else, I think that that's going to be held over him a little bit, and he's going to have to play a long period of time without injuries before I think teams will maybe get over the risk of that. Because if you're going to pay a quarterback $50 million, you better make sure that they're going to be available for you every single week. And if they suffer, a long-term injury like Penix has a history of having, then that's going to tank your entire organization. So it's unfortunate for him. And I think it's just something that he's going to have to deal with. And it's going to make things a little bit trickier for him and how he navigates his career.
And they didn't draft him. This is a different organization now, the way it's put together. Yeah. Last thing for our man Smoking Joe Patrick with our Falcon Camp Confidential, Za'Darius Smith. He had to walk away from football. He explained very open personally about his life with his mom, her health issues, and how he was out there and then just hated being retired and now loves being back with the guys. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the kind of Calais Campbell vibe that he brought a couple years ago.
Yeah, definitely seemed to have that kind of veteran presence of him, like coming into a situation where he is kind of looked at as the leader and somebody who can share some of his experience with some of the younger guys. So you hope that he can do that. But I would recommend to anybody listening, at some point, go to Falcons YouTube and check out his press conference, because there's no way anybody can do it justice other than hearing it for yourself because of how open he was. And, he broke down a couple times, had to take a second to collect himself because of how emotional it all was. But I think he's just really happy to be back playing football.
I agree. Joe Patrick, great work, man. As always, follow him on social media and stay up with what's going on, man. And we will talk, obviously, leading up or after this game on Friday and seeing where this is as we get ready for the regular season. Can't wait for the regular season, Joe. Thanks again.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Cool. Good stuff from Joe Patrick. Coming up, we're going to talk to Grant McCauley. Braves win the opener against the Dodgers.
Kind of a funky game last night, right?
It was.
The ebbs and flows.
And I didn't know if we were going to be clutch late. I really didn't.
I did not have a leadoff triple for Ohtani, resulting in the game not going to extra innings last night.
We'll get Grant's opinion on that. And then A.J. Smith-Shawver makes his third starter of the season for the Braves. What's that going to look like tonight? Stoops and Bell.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
It is Dukes and Bell. More on what is coming down from the NFL Competition Committee meeting, and there are some new rules that we'll need to go over and talk about that will affect all the teams in the NFL, and we'll do that coming up here after we get a chance to talk to our buddy Grant McCauley. And Grant, I asked you yesterday, what do you expect? And you said a dogfight, and it was a dogfight last night. Braves win 4-3. Were you more impressed with Albies driving in the game winner or more impressed with Elder's outing?
I'll be honest with you, it was the completeness of this game that you really needed to see from the Braves. If I have to pick between the two, you needed to start from Elder to kind of lay the foundation for everything else to be possible. But you got the early runs, really should have been another one, but a non-reviewable play at home plate kind of robbed the Braves of an opportunity for that extra. You'll put that to the side because, as you mentioned, Ozzie Albies came through a little bit late with that rally, and of course the Braves bullpen did its thing, and it was an adventure in the ninth inning, but I'll tell you, Walt Weiss called that a grown man save for Raisel Iglesias. Leadoff triple by Shohei Ohtani. That ball is a home run in 28 of the 30 parks, and we're not even having a discussion about that save because that was to lead off the inning. But to come back and strike out Freddie Freeman in that position, runner at third, nobody out, that's just not a thing that happens very often. And then you had to go through another MVP in Mookie Betts and eventually wriggled off the hook there for that save. So the Ozzie moment, a big one, had to have it. The Elder start, you also had to have that. And it continues a trend for Bryce here of many more good starts than bad ones in the second half.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. I thought Bryce, it wasn't like he was giving up the home run. The biggest fear for us, we talked about earlier, is when he gives up the long ball. It was just like maybe sinkers that didn't sink enough. And they also went out of the strike zone, expanded. They got little like these little bloops. Dorks, you know what I mean? There's like Texas leaguers. So it was like a thousand tiny cuts. And conversely, you know, the Braves kind of did the same thing, you know, and ironically, for whatever reason, the Dodgers, you know, too many curveballs initially, and then eventually they started throwing fastballs and really stymied the Braves.
Yeah, it really seemed like, you know, the early runs, it was whoever was going to be able to rack up the most might be the team that's able to outlast the other one by the time it's over, because I think both these teams also have pretty good bullpens, and that's something that Walt Weiss is thinking about with his lineup construction of, all right, well, can I have the right guy up at the right time that's going to help me, you know, or help this team to win a game? That right guy ended up being Ozzie Albies. He had been kind of dropped down a little bit in the order, but right-handed Ozzie Albies is a guy that I think is on the short list of hitters you want up there in important positions or important situations because of what he's able to do. But for Bryce, yeah, I mean, he was not hit very hard in that game, and he just kind of went after him, stayed in the strike zone. He's also, I think, throughout the course of the season, he's altered his changeup grip a few different times, and he was back to throwing a really effective one last night. So sometimes it's just the small things you do over the course of a long season that can really be a difference maker, and it can be as simple as just changing a grip and giving the hitter something else to see that keeps them just that much off balance. And six innings and three runs against the Dodgers lineup, I think you'll take that many more times than not, no matter who's on the mound.
Totally agree. It's Grant McCauley, guys, joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's talk about Smith-Shawver tonight. This is, what, his third start of the season. And again, you know, he's battled several injuries. We know that. But since being drafted, what was he, in the seventh or eighth round? Seventh round, I think it was, in 21. Grant, he's come a long way. And, you know, we keep talking about, can he help us maybe down the road here in the postseason? What are your feelings right now with what you hear about Smith-Shawver and where you think he's at?
Yeah, and Smith-Shawver, when you think about that draft positioning, this is kind of what the Braves have been doing, is getting kids to forego their college career and paying them more, you know, over slot later on in the draft. They kind of like to spread that money around. We saw that happen again this past year with some of the signings that they made. But putting that aside, he rocketed to the big leagues in basically 2 years or less than. He's already pitched in parts of four seasons at the major leagues, which is crazy, though he missed the 13 months with Tommy John. But the stuff is there. It's the command when you come off that long layoff that AJ is going to continue to try to refine. The Braves really, really like the possibility of utilizing him in some meaningful ways in September with an eye towards seeing what kind of weapon he could be for them in October. We know what didn't happen at the trade deadline, but we also see that the group that's around right now is doing some pretty good things and some consistent things in the starting rotation. So you have to like what you're seeing, and they really want to see how much they can get A.J. Smith-Shawver ramped up and ready to contribute in some really important innings down the stretch and in October.
Bottom of the lineup really struggled last night. We talked about, you know, Ozzie with the only extra base hit was, you know, the Matt Olson double, then Ozzie, you know, knocks him in. That Matt Olson slide was not a thing of beauty, but we'll take it. But because you go lefty-righty, Lane Thomas gets inserted. Was that just rust or not familiar with the track? Because that was ugly on that triple from Ohtani.
Yeah, he got turned around a little bit out there. It's kind of, I would imagine, being unfamiliar with play. I mean, he's played in this ballpark before, but you know, it's not like he's spent his entire career getting familiar with every angle there. And to be fair, the Ohtani ball was struck pretty hard. I mean, that was one of those that you'd like to see a major league fielder catch, and certainly if he doesn't get turned around, maybe he has a better chance of dragging it in. But yeah, I think that that's one of those that ultimately worked out. It just meant that Raisel Iglesias had to work a little bit harder, and I think that kind of pumped up Raisel a bit. But I think as far as the overall lineup goes, the Braves have done a really good job of mixing and matching, you know, the righties and lefties like we were talking about, so that you know, the bullpens, especially for other teams, aren't able to just come in and get an easy run at three or four straight lefties. So that part is kind of important. I did ask Walt Weiss about the catching situation down the stretch, because Sean Murphy, you know, he is – a guy that I think he does a lot of things behind the scenes, Walt said, that don't necessarily, you know, they're not public facing, but the helping with the game planning and the sequencing and all the things that are helping pitchers to succeed inside games are things that he's intricately involved in. And he's also a guy that he wants to catch a lot, and he benefits from getting consistent at bats. So moving forward down the, through the season, playing Sean Murphy does a couple of things. It helps the pitching staff. You have the possibility of getting his bat going, and you also can DH Drake Baldwin, as we're seeing today. And this is the first time that Sean's catching in back-to-back games. And that was a conversation Walt told me that he did have with Drake. It's like, look, we want to try to get Sean in here because it checks a number of different boxes, including allowing Drake's bat to stay in the lineup. So I think we're going to see a little bit more Sean Murphy here down the stretch and in September. Mm-hmm. And I think, quite frankly, you need to, because you need to get him going and see what you can get. And even if he isn't the world beater at the plate or the best version of himself at the plate, there are still some things he does for this pitching staff that, quite frankly, nobody else is able to do quite like he does.
I guess the most positive thing for him last night at the dish was that 9-pitch walk.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that if you sit for 2 or 3 or 4 days, it's very difficult to find any kind of rhythm. And that, I think, is one of those things that Sean, when they got him, I mean, Alex said, we wanted him to be the workhorse. We wanted him to come in and catch 130 games and we'd figure out the rest of it. That's why he kind of saw Travis d'Arnaud go. And Sean Murphy, the idea was, and he made the All-Star team in 2023, that he'd be that workhorse guy. The injuries just had different plans for him. So we'll see what this looks like down the stretch. Obviously, everything's a fluid situation and it could change. But with everything they went through trying to like backfill the catcher position, they are very happy to have this tandem. They believe in both of them. This doesn't mean that Drake's going to stop catching altogether. It's still going to be a more equal timeshare behind the plate. But that does mean that Drake can be in the lineup a lot more at DH, which quite frankly is also a place that they needed to address because they weren't getting the production that they were early in the year from guys like Dom Smith.
Grant, we talk about the Dodgers being the standard, right? I mean, everybody wants to compare what we have or what they've got to the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. So just from pitching standpoint, and I think Braves fans need to understand this because we've all talked a lot about it. ERA, we're fourth, they're sixth right now. We have a 3.60 ERA as a staff, guys. We're talking about as a starting staff. The other thing that jumps out at me is runs against. We're fifth, they're fourth. So for all the conversation about these studs and then these brand names that they have, our pitching staff has been right there. And, you know, home runs allowed. They've given up 148. We've given up 146. Like, there's not that big of a difference, Grant.
No, I mean, if we're talking about a blind taste test as far as results are concerned, I don't know that you really would be able to tell the difference. Now, if you start telling me the names of Cy Young Award winners and All-Stars and, you know, the staff that they have assembled in Los Angeles, well, yeah, people would be like, oh, yeah, I want that group. But the Braves, I think, have done a good job as a group. And Chris Sale's done a lot of heavy lifting for the rotation. We understand that. But so have certain guys in rotation for the Dodgers. I think the guy's name's Ohtani, and we'll see when and if he pitches again this year. But some guys are having great years. Other guys, they just kind of do that yeoman's work, and they're just kind of unsung heroes. A guy like Martin Perez, I mean, we talked about all year long, where would the Braves be without Chris Sale? I think we know the answer to that question, but where would they be without Martin Perez or without Bryce Elder, for example? I mean, there's just a lot of different guys that have contributed. It may not be, again, the big name group that the Dodgers have, but when you look at what they've done, if the Braves' run scoring was a little bit more consistent, I think that the Braves have left some considerable meat on the bone as far as wins are concerned in the month of August, and they're still right there, not too far behind the Los Angeles Dodgers for the second-best record in baseball, and who knows what will happen over the final month. So, yeah, to your point, it's not that far off. It may not feel like it all the time, but I'll also point out, everybody's going through the injuries and the inconsistency and the different things of a Major League Baseball season. The Dodgers are not immune to that. They've had some of their big names out for significant amounts of time, and they've had to make different plans too. The difference is they just go out and spend and spend and spend with no end in sight.
Great stuff. Grant McCauley, appreciate it as always. We'll see what happens in game two of this series between the Dodgers and Braves tonight. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks, guys.
You look, remember, 18, we did get, I think we got beat 3-1. Remember, Cunha hit the grand slam against the Dodgers?
That's right.
20, we had him down 3-1. Think about that, guys, in the NLCS, the weird COVID year out playing out in Texas. 21, we beat him. Right now, the Phillies then got our number. But we've taken 3 out of 4 from the Dodgers, despite all the things Grant just talked about, all the resources they've got.
Mm. All right. When we come back, NFL making some rules and judgment calls. One of them happens to do with tackling. The other happens to do with the game they should have done away with years ago. It's Dukes and Bell.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's absolutely refreshing!
NFL making some changes. We'll get to that.
Changes.
Yes, good song. Right? Before we get to that, though, again, just kind of to rehash today, man, and the news is Michael Penix won't play in the preseason. And we all wondered going into camp whether or not we would get a chance to see him. And then with the delayed start to his training camp, right. It even put, you know, even more doubts in many of our minds. And so as we've discussed this today, you know, look, a lot of you have called in. A lot of you have hit us up on the text line, hit us up on social media, and I get it. It's a mixed review. Some people are not worried, and I think those are the hardcore Michael Penix fans who feel like he's just going to step right back in and pick up from wherever his best game was last year. His best game actually was on the verge of being Carolina when he got hurt.
Right.
So,
it, like the light was going on.
That was the last game. But, you know, I hope that's the case. I am disappointed. I'm not even going to sit here and tell you that I'm not, because I just wanted to get a sense of, okay, you know what? It does feel like he's back. And all the things we've been hearing that we haven't seen Mike with our own eyes, even though we saw a lot at camp over those 2.5 weeks that we were up there every day, a lot of this is coming to life. And I don't think that's happening. And so from that standpoint, I'm disappointed. But this simply means, guys, Tua's going to start on Friday. And hopefully they'll get a good look at him and feel better. Maybe you'll feel better about what they're seeing. And then if we have to roll into Pittsburgh 2.5 weeks later, September 13th, that's the judgment. It is what it is. But the judgment could also be, Mike, that they name Michael Penix the starter, even without playing in the preseason. And I just want to say that's out there only because Kevin Stefanski is still not named a starter.
I know that we want to see Michael Penix Jr. in week one, right? Start the season. We get the full, complete 17 weeks to evaluate what this guy is. And then we can make a determination if we feel confident enough to keep rolling with him. And then we give him that, you know, pick up the fifth-year option. I think it's May you brought up the other day. And we get on with it. But, you know, Tua, I mean, and guy, I said this to a guy on the text line. And I'm not trying to be a wise ass. I'm just not interested in Tua because I don't see a future with Tua. I think he's had great opportunities. I think he struggled in an offense that was completely built for him. In Miami. And I'm not a big fan of how that coach ran his entire team, but I thought the offense, you know, it was a pretty good team with Mike McDaniel. I thought, you know, they played to his strengths. They had some weirdness with Tariq Hill and some other things, but still, it should have been better than what it was last year. He certainly came in here and knew what he was doing. I want to see the future with Michael Penix Jr. It's a cheaper option, and we get on with it. Now, the other side of this thing is this fascination with Jack Strand. And I like him. We all do. And certainly somebody in the front office said, they didn't invite Jack Strand down here for blanks and giggles. Somebody, and I think this is a nice indicator, Carl, for where this franchise is going.
Yeah.
And they have a plan. Now, we may not get there this year, which Falcon fans don't want to hear, because we still have a lot of holes on defense. Reality. But getting back to this, somebody in that organization saw Strand and said, look, if this guy goes to a Big Ten school or an SEC school, he's probably going to the second round. And now we got him. We got a potential steal. And so, hey, I got to keep him. with all due respect to Cooper Rush, where it gets funky is, as we described yesterday, all the moving parts of the 53-man roster. But first things first, getting back to the initial point, I got to accept it. I'm not expecting anything. Maybe we get saddled with Tua in Pittsburgh. Hopefully Mike just shows out in these next 3 weeks that we won't be privy to. Yeah. We're not going to see him Friday.
And that's kind of where this is. So we'll wait to see. I'm just not as optimistic about maybe seeing him in week 3 or 4, Mike, and then just the magic happens. Man, what a story that would be, though, if it played out that way, right? Where he just comes on, he's gangbusters, Mike, and all of a sudden the offense explodes and we're rolling. But doesn't that have a lot to do with continuity and playing and feeling confident and presence? And, like, all this stuff goes hand in hand. So that's why I'm a little reluctant, unlike some of you. The Jack Strand thing, Frost. I'm just saying, if this is based on performance, he's been your best quarterback. Not debatable. And if it's based on competition, start him. But they won't. And they don't have the balls to do it because of the situation that Mike just laid out.
Right.
But that's part of why half the Falcon Nation out here is saying, what is going on? We had tons of calls earlier in the show like, hey, I'm all for this. Because if we're going to be bad with a veteran, why not be bad with a young guy who can play? Yeah. At least we think he can. And if we're bad, then guess what? We were wrong, and we're back in the draft anyway.
Right. And like, if Mike looks like he did last year, by the way, there's been reports out of Tampa that it's not exactly wine and roses for Zach Robinson down there with Baker Mayfield and that offense. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, sometimes, guys, people advance, they get attached to winning programs, and their resume, Lane Kiffin for one, suddenly sometimes it's not as good as you think it is. Though they have a level of success, and Lane has certainly got there. But a guy that comes to mind is Hugh Jackson. Remember Hugh Jackson?
Yes.
Guy was always around the NFL for years, and nobody knew what he did. What did he do? What he did particularly well? You know, he got to be head coach of the Bengals or the Browns. It was 1 year. But either way, that's, I think, what Zach Robinson is. You know, there's this shine on him because of the Rams and Sean McVay, and you realize you take away Sean McVay, and you realize this guy's not nothing. You know, and Raheem should have known better when he brought him in. That gets back to Mike not getting coached up. Mike not being in a position to do some things that might have been more suited to his game last year before he got injured. But then that gets back to the other thing. An injury-prone guy that some teams didn't want to draft because of the injuries got injured. And now we're still going through this because we are in year 3 and we have no idea what this dude is, and hopefully we get some closure on it. One way or the other.
All right. With that said, here's the news from the NFL. They are doing away with the Pro Bowl game.
Yay!
The competition committee meeting, and they put it out there. They're the first U.S. league or major U.S. league to end its All-Star game and or event, however you want to state it. But they're going to focus on the celebration of Pro Bowlers with no alternates. I like this. I think it's always been about the recognition. And once you went away from real football where, hey, Ray Lewis was trying to take your head off, it just didn't mean anything, right? Part of the competition part of this was I'm getting a chance to compete against the best at all these other positions, and I get to go show out. And then, oh, yeah, I got a trip to Hawaii, which made it fun. All that stuff is going away, Mike. And by the way, now everything is about protecting these guys and the investment. So I'm fine with this. You said you hadn't watched it in years, right?
No, man, it's just for fun. I looked up while you were talking, the 1988 NFL Pro Bowl in Honolulu. I mean, this is great. The MVP was Boomer Esiason. I'm looking at this right now. He was the rookie of the year in the NFL, but I'm looking at the game itself. I mean, Roger Craig, Bruce Smith, Joe Montana, John Elway, and these guys are tackling too. These guys are hitting.
Crazy.
I mean, Lawrence Taylor. I mean, it's just Ronnie Lott. Ronnie, we're going to have an exhibition game. I need you to play at 50%.
No, we're not.
Herschel Walker was in this game. It's basically it's about 20 Pro Bowl. It's basically 15 Hall of Famers in this game, right? But it mattered, and it was hard-hitting, man. Jerry Rice, Carl Lee, Bruce Matthews, Anthony Munoz, Joey Browner, Reggie White, Eric Dickerson. I mean, how about that? And there was real tackling.
Real tackling.
But again, now in a year where we just learned the NFL is, you know, learning more and more about CTE. I mean, most of us knew about it. Now you realize we don't need extra contact. There's no way for these guys to play at 50%. And nobody especially wants to play in this when half the guys are in the Super Bowl anyway. That's another thing.
It is true.
You know, you got like 6 or 7 guys if the teams are that good that are probably Pro Bowlers playing in the Super Bowl. So they're not even there.
Here's the other thing, and maybe we'll dive into this a little bit deeper tomorrow, but the NFL will be monitoring this season these particular tackles.
Which tackle?
Well, and you're going to get a 1-game suspension now. Hip drop tackle, horse collar.
Are the hip? No one even knows what the hip drop. I mean, the hip drop can sometimes be confused for a legal tackle by some of these referees. I don't like them giving more things for the refs to interpret.
Yeah, and just to describe it to you guys, I grab a guy and then I swing around and I use my body weight, which is how legs snap. Okay,
right. But how purposely. do smaller guys tackle some guys that are bigger than them?
Yeah.
No, that's all another part of it.
Hip drop tackles, horse collar, you know what that is.
Right.
Launching, hit a defenseless player or blindside blocks.
This is where we get into the matrix rules, where a guy's aiming for a contact point, and then by the time you left your feet. So now you can't leave your feet. Okay, sometimes you have to make a dive to make a tackle. I understand they want to protect the players, but to me, you're giving the refs more stuff to screw up.
Yeah.
And unless there's a mechanism where these potential suspensions can be appealed, I don't like this one bit.
So, clarity on this, it's any player who commits 3 violations in a season.
Okay.
In any of these categories. So, for example, you could have a game where you have a hip drop tackle, right? Okay, penalty on the field, great, but that goes a mark against you. 3 weeks later, you got a launching penalty. Now you got 2 of these.
Mm.
Last week of the season, you get hit with a blindside block because you hit somebody. Now you've got 3 strikes, and Mike, you're suspended. That's what we're talking about.
Right. So a guy like Vontaze Burfict would have gotten got. You know, if you're talking about like some serious offenders back in the day. You know, I mean, look, we get it. We don't want to see headhunting. It's even worse in college because the college officials aren't as good as the NFL officials, and they interpret it the wrong way. You know, the SEC, you know, we see college now, at least, you know, we're starting to move away from, you know, losing you the second first half of the next game.
That's true.
There's a lot of, I get it. Player safety is a concern. Anytime you give NFL officials room for interpretation, they almost cussed it up.
They do. No, it feels that way. So we'll see where this goes, but the league trying to make some adjustments, competition committee.
I mean, hell, we can't, pass interference on what it catches is a great freaking mystery right now, you know?
Yeah. And again, you know what this is under, right? This is under the premise of safety.
Player safety.
That's what this is under. All right, we got to get out of here, man. Turl's got a full show tonight, full show. So stay tuned. He'll get you squared away with everything. I'm sure he's got big thoughts on Penix as well. That's coming up at 6 o'clock tomorrow, Tour Championship. We will be out there. Come on out and join us. Andy and Randy will be there as well. Michelob Ultra Club will be broadcasting live out there. Looking forward to it Thursday and Friday. Big O, let's get out of here, man, and clear our throat. Hey, thanks to all of our guests, including the bus. Yeah, Jerome better stop by,
love
man.
The bus, man.
Wheels
on the bus go round and round.
He came on because, guys, he's a part of the new IFL League and Athens Crush, right, Mike?
Yep.
Athens Crush.
Yeah, man, got arena football coming out there, Aikens Ford Arena. If you're up in that neck of the woods, it's going to be a lot of fun. And go check it out. And Bus says he's going to be out there with a bunch of games.
All right, man. Go check that out on Odyssey.com. All of our other guests are there as well. Tomorrow, we're looking forward to seeing you and having a lot of fun as well. We got a lot to get to before we get to this final preseason game. Mm-hmm. There are other things we will be paying attention to. We'll break that down for you as well. All right, man. Big O, great job engineering the show as always, keeping us on track. Day-to-day executive producer. And thanks to you for making us a part of your day. Mike Bell, let's get out of here, man. Clear your throat.
You know what? I'd really be all in with you guys for Jack Strand.
Frost.
If we hadn't drafted Michael Penix Jr. And we had just simply signed Kirk Cousins, and this would have been his 3rd year, and then you guys could be all excited about, hey, we found this diamond in the rough, this Jack Strand guy. Because we spent the money, you know, on draft equity on people we could have used for more defense. And Kirk Cousins, I mean, it's pretty simple. You don't draft that, you know, Michael Penix there. And he goes wherever he goes, and maybe his career changes and it's a different outcome. Parallel universe. Yeah, but right now we got to establish that Michael Penix is our quarterback, one way or the other. But hopefully we hold on to Jack Strand, because, man, he's got people fired up.
Start him. Hey, leadership requires being proactive,
yes.
Not reactive.
Yes.
Greg Sankey, I'm glad you did react, but it was still a little bit late. Hey, give credit to the Big Ten. Tony Petitti didn't wait. As soon as this crap came down, they were like, nope, not in our conference. Now across the board, everybody's on the same page. Was it that hard? Why can't we do this for other things that are troubling us in college football?
Right, right.
Hey, if you love the show,
tell your friends.
If you don't,
you brought a very smelly lunch to the office.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Realtek 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Realtek 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's infinitely refreshing!